Okay, we've gathered here to do Phineas Wake, and musical accompaniment will be provided by Dell, and we're doing the... What'd you say? You could sing?
Yeah, if you need some music, I can sing. And if you need music during a break, I can sing.
I was joking.
Me too.
Dell's a guitarist. He's a musician, so and I've got him on mute. So no,
don't put me on mute, Joe. I want to engage in this. I said, don't put me on mute. I want to engage.
No, I'm not. Everybody's open. Again, we have not started recording. This will not be on. We can't. It's very hard to get going on this. Now, what was the other point?
Hey, Bob, do you think it's Ion making it hard to do Finnegan's Wake because he don't want to do it? Or do you think it's just happening like that?
I don't know yet. Don't know what Ion's doing. No,
I feel like every time we get here, sometimes it's always like it never happens right away.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I won't be surprised that Ion will leave soon. He may not help us. So what... I think, oh, yeah, I better look up the number of pages. Is this the fifth page or the sixth page? I'm going to go look at my index
my
and see
God,
what
I'm
I've
so
done.
Enthralled with it.
It's a sixth,
you know,
sixth
so enthralled
page.
We can't even remember.
Look at I. There it is.
Sixth page.
No embrace. Damn hierarchy. You didn't even know where.
Let me gravy down.
Yeah.
Sixth page, Bob.
Ion and Finney's Wake, you think is it? But I just want to see my list.
Bob, do you think we're going to be able to do Finnegan's Wake in less pages it took to write it?
Now, what do you mean? How do you do that?
Well, there are roughly 600 and something pages in this book, and are we going to do 600 pages in a strange order, or are we going to do Finnegan's Wake in, say, 20 pages, or are we going... That's what I'm asking.
Good question. I don't know.
This could go on forever.
Yeah.
And, ever. And,
so this, we're probably going to do every page. No, it's I've got page 44, 68, 83, 179, but I didn't add on 102, so it's the sixth page. Yeah, okay, here we go, page 38. We had fun kibitzing. This one in our Phineas Wake Society group, people sit around, have a lot of fun talking, either show up a little early or go on for 50, 20 minutes, then Murray Gross had to tell everybody to stop gossiping and talking, and then we get into it. And we would read a page or two. Each person, it would shift so that everybody did like a line and a half. So you go around the group and everybody practiced reading Finnegan's Wake. And then Murray would start to tell what it meant from his, he had time to do a lot of research. So he would give a general overview. And then we would take each word or each couple of words. That was the order every time. And that was in the bigger public. Stop making noises. Come on, Jermaine. Jesus Christ.
That's not me.
Well, it's coming out of your hole.
Quiet.
So Tuck Buddy is setting you up there.
Nope.
Okay.
No, not my
So, yeah. So how do I know? How do I know you're not lying? I can't see. I won't embarrass you by
asking. You heard that again? I was talking and I heard it right now again, like somebody's moving things around.
No, nobody heard it. Didn't happen again, Jermaine. Okay, so as I was saying, that was in the general group, bigger audience, but then the specialist nerd, OCD ones, OCD Joycians, would go to Murray's place, where in the top floor, Mark Lane wrote in 67, Rush to Judgment, the first major critique of the Warren Commission was done in Murray's house, and Murray, as I told you, for 2 years had to worry about his car being blown up every morning when he went to work because he had exposed the mafia to the government and everything. And security bonds, I think it was. So with a smaller group, I think it was different, maybe similar. No, we didn't read it. We all knew how to read it, so we didn't have to practice reading it. We just got right into it, picked up where the last page was, and then spend the next five sessions on the next paragraph. It was amazing. You spend five, you know. I think we met every couple of weeks or once a month or something, and you you do a paragraph for over 3 months. So that's what you can do. But we're not doing that. We've got eye on creating a new general overview by this order. So it's almost like we don't even have to do the whole page. We just do whatever we do within the page for that night. And then we go to another page the next week. Like, you know, a couple weeks ago, we only did one little paragraph. So so as you're looking at this, and I start to read it, you can interrupt any time, and you can zoom ahead of me, go faster, and if you think you see what's going on, then start talking. So in a way, it's less controlled. Murray really liked it controlled. This is less controlled. So I'm going to just read our CAD for a second to see if this is a description of the CAD. So we're into page 30, chapter 2, which is all about HCE, and he's going to bump into the CAD somewhere, and we want to, why is the CAD being, why is Ion indicating this page for the next orderly, is it? Didn't we have a bit about the CAD before? We had something about the encounter, didn't we? In the park.
Some kind of fight or something. A fight.
Yeah, we had a fight, yeah. And, of course, the main scenes are referred to almost every page. So we might find the CAD meeting referred to on every page. So it's hard to say which is the more important page. Now, this begins with, on page 36 at the bottom, Gaping Gill, scanning through, who is he, what did he do? Now, I can cheat and go to an outline. And this is page 35 to 36, is the encounter with the CAD in the park. 36 to 38 is the CAD dines and drinks. So it looks like this is the CAD's activities after he encounters HCE over the question of what is time, or what time is it. And then it goes into 38 to 42, the CAD story is spread, so it goes through all the people that are gossip and spread it around. And then that ends up talking about the ballad by Hosty, which becomes the first page we did, page 44. So we've gone back to before the beginning of the book. That Ion's laid out on page 44. So all this description of Gaping Gill, that may be the guy in the bar or in the restaurant that the CAD is attending. So beginning on 38, line 9, our CAD's bit of strife, knee Berenice Maxwellton, with a quick ear for spittoons, as the aftertale hath it, gleaned up as usual with dumbbestic husbandry, no persics and ermelions for the Pomerantia, but sipping the clav in her claw, broke of the matter among 111, remember 111 was ALP's number, broke of the matter among 111 others in her usual curtsy, so maybe that's ALP, how faint these fast vespers womanly are, a secret piss-pick liando, amid the laverty den of their manfolker. The next Now, man, folk or folk culture. The next night nudge one, so back before the brackets, her usual curtsy, the next night nudge one, as was his hegesippus, over a hapashi, her eyes dry and small and speech thicklish because he appeared a funny color like he couldn't stood the old hens no longer, to her particular reverend, the director, whom she had been meaning in her mind primarily to speak with, hush, intra, just a timblespoon, trusting. So you can look at that as somebody's interrupting the narrator with some instructions on the eating of the food. Trusting, between coupled lips and Anna Laurie promises, might she never have, and isn't a Carrie Puddin, come human off for her peckle of pigeons, that the gossipal so delivered in his epistolier. buried teetotally in their Irish stew would go no further than his Jesuit's cloth. Oh, I know why Ion fucking picked this. It's fucking food. Fucking description of food. Highly suspect. Ion's trying to get back to the goddamn recipe that I prevented him from talking about 2 hours ago. Okay, that the gospel so delivered in his epistolary buried teetotally in their Irish stew. Remember the whole stew? Now look at that.
Right.
Now that, yep. I give Ion, knowing yep. what's coming, is why he made a theme.
Kudos.
Not stew, right? It's obvious he's
yep.
doing that.
Yep. Yep.
Which is very nice. That's good. I like him doing that. Buried teetotally in their Irish stew would go no further than his Jesuit's cloth. Yet, in Viner's Venitas, or Venitas, Volatiles Valetotum, it was this overspoiled priest, Mr. Brown, disguised as a Vincentian, who, when seized of the facts, so I think he's the first gossiper? What did it say? Yeah, the cad dines and drinks. And so you can use this working outline to cheat. The cad mm-hmm. story is spread. So he, the priest, is the first guy to pick it up. Who, when seized of the facts, was overheard, so he was overheard, in his secondary personality as a Nolan, which is an important figure in Dublin literature, and under-eared Pole Soul by accident, if that is the incident, it was an accident, for here the Rua of Ecclesiastes of Hippopops, the Witress of Hava Ben Hanna, to pianissimi, a slightly varied version of Crooked Dribb's Confidentials. We'll look up Crooked Dribb's, it's probably some journal. What Mayor Aloysius, I think that's Joyce's middle name, James Aloysius. What Mayor Mother Aloysius said, but for Josephine's sake, hands between her hands, in fealty sworn, my braver best, my fur. Now that is a line that McLuhan always quoted. Baudelaire in Flowers of, what's the name of his famous 1857 book of poetry? Flowers of Evil, I think. He addresses in the foreword the reader, and he calls them my hypocrite lector, blah, 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 and my freer, my brother. So, going to 138, they'll have it. So, this is a line that McLuhan quoted all the time. Let's see if we got the whole thing here. Yeah, Baudelaire. So it's hypocrite lector, which means the hypocritical reader. Mon semblable, how Ion's always saying, would they resemble that remark? So mon semblable, mon frère. That's parts of it. And then there's a few more words. So here it's my braver best for mon semblable and my frower for my French word brother, mon frère. And to the strains of the secret of her birth, hushly pierced the ruby end orellum of one Philly Thursum, that means piercing the ear, a lay teacher of rural science and orthophonetics. I remember Joyce's, when Ogden Nash recorded Joyce, they put out an album of it, and I think they called themselves the Orthophonetic Society. Doesn't seem to be any mention of that here. So a lay teacher of rural science and orthophonetics, ethics of the phonetic alphabet, of a near stout figure and about the middle of his 40s during a priestly flutter for safe and sane bets at the hippic run fields of Breezy Baldo on a date. WW goes through the card. So this may be a horse race. Baldo is a district of Dublin that has a race course. Easily capable of remembrance by all pickers-up of events, national and Dublin details. The doubles of Perkin and Pollock, Peer and Prohl. I think he's mixing in media, newspapers and that, with the spread of gossip. When the classic uncouraged Hackney plate was captured by two noses in a stable-cloth finish, eck and neck, or neck and neck, some and none, evelo nevelo, from the cream-cold bold boy Cromwell after a clever getaway by Captain Chaplain Blount's Rohini St. Dalou, drummer coxswain. Now on to pick third, at breakneck odds, thanks to you, great little, bonny little, porty little, Winnie Widger. You're all their nappies, who in his never-ripped mud and purpular, oh, there I am, and purpular cap was surely leagues, unlike any other phantom weight that ever topped our Timber Maggies. It often reminds me, you know, the way Ion goes on, he might say, neck and neck or neck and neck, and then he'll do an absurd continuation of neck and neck with other words. You see that with Joyce. Eck and neck, some and none, evelo nevelo, from the Green Colt. So there's something in Ion's eloquence that Joyce was approximating. And also Janer Hypercletes I played at the beginning of the show. His subgenius ran. Okay, that's enough for me. If you want to talk or start noticing, see, look at all the details when you look at the annotations. Too many details to say what this page, like every other page, is about. There is hints on the broad narrative that there's dinner happening. And the story of the CAD meeting the HCE is starting to spread. So
Bob, which is one of introducing ALP.
Just a minute, Scott. Go ahead, Michael.
We ended 102 with introducing ALP, and in this one, the first one, it looks like they're referring again to her.
Yeah, she's embedded in here. And now, before Scott speaks, I was going to say... So we're going to dinner... But it's also the spread of information. So in a sense, Joyce is showing that we not only have a food stomach, we got an ear stomach. We've got all of our senses, our appetites, our things you eat. You eat with your ears, your eyes. So I'm thinking that's that may be what Joyce, what I am showing. Joyce is laying out the structure of the book, food and information, the same thing. So what are we going to say, Scott?
Well, two things. The orthophonetics is tweeting. That's bird sounds. And the initial line here referring to Bernice Maxwelton, that seems to be a reference to the Scottish poem Annie Laurie, or Scottish song Annie Laurie, which begins, Maxwelton's Braes are Bonnie.
Is this something you knew, or you looked it up? Because I'm looking at it in McHugh.
No, I just knew that.
Yeah, you just knew that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, where would you hear Scottish songs? Where would you hear Scottish songs, Scott? Oh, he's probably faded out.
I learned that song when I was a kid, and I misheard it. So it was like the line I heard was Max Welton's Braves are calling. And so I heard it wrong, and I always had this question in my mind, well, that doesn't make sense, you know. but the actual words are different. It's not Braves, it's Braes. And the line is, instead of our calling, it's our bunny. So I remembered it because I initially misheard it.
Right. So how did you know you misheard it?
Well, I didn't until I looked it up now. But I recognized Max Welton, and I always wondered what that was in reference to. And the only place I've ever heard that word was in Annie Laurie.
Right. Now, what environment, is there an Irish part of Spokane or wherever it was you were in Washington growing up?
It's not Irish, it's Scottish.
Oh, okay. So you are a Scottish family in your roots?
No, but I think, I don't remember the first time I heard that song, but it was when I was a child. No, I'm
amazing.
Not Scottish, I'm Welsh.
Right. Well, who would be singing it around you as a child?
We might have heard it in singing class, in music class, when I was in grammar school, because we had a singing class where we sang some Scottish songs and stuff like that. So that's probably where I heard it the first time.
Right. Now, you were born in 47. So
yeah.
you're in school before TV. And so that's a whole world that you're hearing. That's 30s and 20s teachers who know that stuff, right? From their country.
Yeah.
Wherever they came from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I was in France, so I didn't hear any of this English stuff, but and I never, once I got to New York and got into the radio music, I hated any folk shit. It just wasn't as good as pop music, which had instruments in that. I never understood the fascination with the old singing by younger people. But anyways, did you like this kind of music, or didn't you care, take it or leave it?
No, I liked it because I liked the something about the Scottish folk music, the sound. It's probably similar to Welsh, you know,
yeah.
And it's the same Celtic origins and stuff. So it's a similar, and song is really big in Wales. It's like everybody goes to the same church and they all sing the same songs, and it's all about music and singing together, you know, collective singing
like
and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's more like the Black church than the Protestant church have dead singing. So it's more oral than the Protestant church, right?
Yeah, like another one I used to like is actually a Welsh song called The Bells of Rhymney,
yeah,
which the Byrds turned into a popular song, but it's about a Welsh mining disaster in the town of Rhymney.
Yeah, now, you're going to hear Ian describe what happens to our living situation after the EMP, but if you have no electricity, Finnegan's Wake is so fantastic for retrieving memories for people, especially when you got notes spelling out what it is. You never thought you'd be talking about your grammar school Scottish fucking stuff, you know, an hour ago. Or Welsh song.
No.
You know,
no.
It's incredible what, you know, he has, in a way, if people were shell-shocked into speechlessness, which he might have thought TV was going to do because it would be all new, and he would exaggerate the effects. He says, I've got to save speech. I've got to save fucking information. And he figured out a way to do it, to
mm-hmm.
evoke all kinds of things, people's cultural memories. Pretty fantastic.
Yeah, and he wouldn't necessarily even have to think that consciously.
Right.
He could just be motivated.
To save speech.
Yeah.
And being a linguist, he knew everything about speech. I noticed in my notes further down, Annie Laurie promises is further down, but it says Max Welton, hyphenated, is a city, in brackets, Robbie Burns.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay, so let's say Max Welton girls are hot.
Yeah.
What songs about?
Right.
Which is what they always sang about,
mm-hmm.
girls. Sure glad that Adam, you know, donated his rib to culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm speaking to the boys here.
Yes, Bob, yes, Bob, yes, 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 Bob.
You horny bastard, I know, it's top of your village, you got nobody there. Max,
we need some ribs around here, Bob. We could do some ribs around here, Bob.
Yeah, I always think of some poem by Byron or somebody. It's called She Walks in Beauty. Maybe it's Shakespeare. Anybody know that song? I mean, that poem, She Walks in Beauty?
No.
Didn't sound familiar? Well, you can look it up, but it stuck in my mind. And I always, when I see beautiful women, I always think of Byron seeing somebody, and just the grace of a woman. She walks in beauty is quite a archetypal experience. I mean, maybe women appreciate it too, but the female form is pretty amazing. As Ian said, it's sculptural. He said that the Playboy foldouts were not nudity; they were sculptural. It was sculpture. And that's what the girls do with bras. They make themselves sculptural, right?
Nothing more gorgeous in creation than the female form, Bob.
Yeah.
Yep.
But sometimes maybe the male form is just as groovy in its complementarity.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know about that.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, because it's just like the male form is just like, it's just there, you know? It's like,
well, the, yeah, but you see some of rippling stomachs. Not that rippling stomachs is pretty to everybody, but the human male can look really good if he's very balanced in all
the like the David. This is the Michelangelo David. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's the ideal of male form.
Except those models, Scott, had to work in really cold weather. Did you notice that?
Say it again. The models.
Those models for the Statue of David, the models they used had to work in really, really cold weather, Bob.
Well, how do you know that?
They're diminished.
The penises are like really small. That's cold weather issues. Yeah.
Yeah, now what's interesting in the drama of cognition, I experienced it today. You know, I see a lot of beautiful bodies, ugly bodies, because everybody's in very skimpily dressed along the beach. So these is two 25-year-olds or so coming towards me, and they were shapely and they were nice looking, you know, comfortable middle class, upper middle class, and class. They even had walking barefoot. They didn't have much on. So as I passed them, now I'm wearing my I'm not wearing a mask, and they were. So most people, if they're not wearing their mask, they put it on when they see me coming. So there's a lot of drama of what to do with your mask. And I generally am polite and look down as I pass them, so that I'm not breathing on them or letting them look away. I'm not trying to make eye contact. So I was walking along and I looked down and they approached and then I looked up to my left, and right at that point, the second girl's going by, and so my eye accidentally, or maybe intentionally, looked at her breasts as they were passing by. And right when I did, she goes, hi. Okay? She went, hi. Now, they usually don't say anything. They're snobs most of the time in relation to me. But I thought,
Did she have a mask on? Did she have a mask on?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm not. They look really nice. They may not have had masks, but let's say they did, because most of them do. And so she said, "I." So I go, "There it is." She. Let's assume she saw me look at her tits. So she immediately blocks it by distracting me by saying hi. You know what I mean? And I was wondering how instinctual it was that her way she said hi, you know, she used her mouth to block my gaze. The timing was so tight. So anyways, that's an example of, you know, looking at beauty, and then what do women think about it? How do they react to that? Their self-consciousness. I've told you before that if I walk behind some woman going along, and usually if they're in good shape, and I start just staring at their back, they immediately start looking around. They can feel it. Now, girls tell me they can feel it, you know, but I don't know if they're bullshitting. I don't hear any girls talking right now. You're all shy and just giggling, but how good are you picking up the gaze?
I think it's true. I mean, lately I haven't had a chance to test it, but yes, you could feel some vibration of some type.
Right, whereas the guy doesn't. Can you walk along with some guy, he doesn't look around, you notice you're looking around because you're feeling someone's looking at you?
No, well, I would suspect that most women, I mean, young girls or whatever, when they pass men, the women are thinking, they're looking at us. They're looking at me. They're looking at my boobs. They're looking wherever. They're looking at my ass. You know, so it's kind of built in that, yeah, guys are going to do that. So, you know.
So you can be indifferent to it. And maybe sometimes you can be playful with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you're young, then you could be more playful than when you're older.
Yeah. That's right. Now here's another thing. Coming up on three teenage, nice looking 17-year-olds. What happens is maybe when you're approaching, who's banging their clothes or dishes? Watch it. So, as you're approaching them, the three girls are talking, but one of them is more interested in guys, and they start sneaking looks at you to see if you're looking at them or her. And so it fragments.
Oh, God.
Oh, Bob's gone.
Yeah.
He's been 4 hours trying to do this, Paige. Did anybody post the link? That's what he's waiting on. To find page 38.
We did it. It's done.
Yeah.
I know it's done, but did Bob do it? That's the thing. You don't know if Bob did it or not.
Well, he was reading it.
Yeah, he read it on 39.
That doesn't mean anything. Will he remember that he read it?
No. See, that's the rub. He's like, okay, we're time to start.
He may be still talking, thinking that we're listening.
They may
right.
Be quiet. Why is nobody speaking?
Yeah.
Do women have a better capacity to feel being watched than men?
Look, I just turned the speaker up. I hear everything
depends.
You say when I knocked off,
depends.
So I heard all that bullshit, okay?
It depends.
Yeah.
As if I couldn't remember, I was reading it. I was making an important point. How much did you hear about the three girls? Two are engaged.
We heard everything.
All of it.
We heard everything.
You heard all that. Well, has anybody here noticed that? That one girl cheats. Like, the girls are supposed to ignore the guys because then they might start competing for the guy. So one girl sheepishly, it seems to me, looks over and gets ahead of the other two in terms of flirting. Have you thought of that or noticed that?
If they'll just put your penis in their mouth, you'll get their attention right away. You won't have to wait.
That's why you never get laid, Ayad. That's why you're not physical. You're so rude. And crude, pornographic. You just don't know how to do it with a lady.
Oh, so says the granny monger.
Well, that's my line. You don't know if I actually do that. Anyway, has anybody get what I'm saying about watching the third girl cheat? Nobody knows what I'm talking about? So this is all my own opinion.
We know, Bob, but sometimes the third girl is watching for the other two girls. Like he's looking
okay.
At you. He's looking at you.
Yeah. The lookout.
She'll say that later when they pass you.
Yeah.
Yeah, like say it's Betty, Sally, and Nan. Nan says, yeah, hey, Betty, oh, man, was he looking at your navel? Oh, my God, he could handle your navel. Okay, Nan, is that true? Did girls talk about, I think they did that in their teens, right? They would comment on what they got looked at.
Probably.
Right?
I can hardly remember that long ago, but, yeah, I think we always talked about the guys that we passed, you know, like, ooh, he's cute, or, ooh, he's looking, oh, he's talking, looking at you, you know, all that.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
And so
you're
too shy to go